G'day folks, and welcome to, of course, the Little Mullet Podcast. Here tonight, we're going to be looking at Payback, a Mel Gibson film which really was hot on the heels of the success of the fourth installment of the Lethal Weapon franchise, which was something a little bit different for Mel, but also one hell of a great, fun action film and a bit of a dark comedy. All here on the Little Mullet Podcast tonight, we chat Payback.
I'm sitting here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that movie, I'm the leader, Molly. Wow, I'm the leader. Wow, I'm the leader. Oh, I'm the leader, Molly.
And welcome back to the show, folks. This is your host, Adam O'Brien, here for the Lethal Mullet Podcast, live on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network, and also a week later on the Fandom Podcast Network with our pals Kyle and Kevin over there. Big shout out to those guys. All right, tonight we're looking at Mel Gibson's Payback. This is one of my favorites, and it's actually one of my father's favorite films from the time, too. Now, this is a movie which Mel Gibson plays basically a hard-boiled crook, gangster, if you like. By the name of Porter. That's all we know about his name in this. And basically, he's left for dead by one of his partners after a heist, and his wife as well. And from here, it's about him getting even, but also getting his money back. He's very professional. He's not after anything more than, of course, his money back. So, we'll be looking at that tonight. It was directed by Brian Helgeland, and it was written by him as well. But unfortunately, Brian was pushed out of the production towards the end of the shoot, and might have been the post-production, I'd say. And at that stage, this is where Mel Gibson came in and pretty much did all the editing. And, well, you've got the film that you see in the theatrical edition, which is the better film. There's no getting around it. But if you're able to get the Blu-ray, which I highly suggest that you do, you will get a great edition of it with the original intentions that Brian had, which was much more a 1970s, noir thriller, if you like, with a little bit of action thrown in and quite a bit of humor. That's to say, this is one of the funnier films, which has got, you know, quite heavy violent content at the same time. It's different, and it's certainly a revenge flick, and that's all tonight here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. But before we look into that, let's let you know where you can catch this show and many others like it. G'day, man. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Now, folks, you know we're massive fans of a certain Scott. Yes, we're talking about a certain Scott from, of course, the UK. You know exactly who we're talking about, a man that little is needed to be told about when it comes to just the amount of amazing action content he's given us over the years. And, of course, we're talking about, you know, a guy that, without a doubt, has given us time and time again some franchise films, and also, I think personally, some greatness when it comes to the worlds of just straight ahead UK action cinema. That is, of course, Scott Adkins, who plays Killer in the new film, John Wick Chapter 4. Of course, we've got Keanu Reeves back as John Wick. Donnie Yen playing Kane. Bill Skarsgård in this as well. And, there's a host of others returning characters as well in this film. Now, of course, Kevin the Raider nerd Reisler seen it, enjoyed it, thought it was fantastic. And he's definitely let us know that it's worth us getting out to the cinema to see. And, of course, you know, he's a huge fan. So, of course, he cosplayed as Raider nerd Wick at the screening he saw. So good on him. Fantastic stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, is this the end of the franchise for Keanu? I mean, he's been at the all the way through. Obviously, it's got his character's name as the lead. But I think, you know, if anything, from reports in some of these magazine articles, the interviews they've had with, of course, Chad Stahelski, the director, and, of course, Keanu himself, I think they want to give John Wick himself a little bit of a rest. And he certainly earned it. He's worked bloody hard in the role. I mean, this is, again, one of the more successful openings. It's made a ton of money already. So you've got to give it to him for that. And I think for somebody like Chad, who's now busy with, of course, some other projects coming up. He's got some different adaptations he's currently working on. One of those being, of course, Highlander. And, of course, Highlander, he was rumored to originally have Henry Cavill in the role of the lead in this film. Whether that was going to be Connor McLeod again or a different immortal, we're not sure. But that was what was going at while. And I think that's now, because they've left it so long, it's been now gone to the point where the actual role will have to go to somebody else. And then the rumor is that it's going to Chris Hemsworth, which, you know, as fans and obviously fellow countrymen of Chris, we're very happy for him to be able to do that role. And he certainly looks the part of a Scotsman, a Highlander. So it could be interesting to see how that goes about. But in some of the latest interviews, Chad's talking about how it might be even easier if they just did a TV show of the Highlander, just like the original series. Which is a great series. Obviously, Adrian Paul and the team did a fantastic job. We're currently actually going through those seasons on this very channel. We're going to be doing season 3 very soon with Andy Sloan. Sensei Andy Sloan, I should say. One of the greats and, of course, knows all the ins and outs of the franchise. He's going to be a real teacher when it comes to that sort of stuff. So we're looking forward to that. But I must say, too, with John Wick and all that, you know, it has that sort of ideal of, you know, the adventure could happen at any time. So that's huge. Now, the other big film doing the rounds right now, and it's just about to be released in a couple of days here in Queensland, is, of course, Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves with Chris Pine, of course, Michelle Rodriguez. It is doing fantastic big bucks. And if anything, it's meant to be a real down-and-out, straight-up fun film. And, you know, if there's one thing that first film was back in 2000 or whenever it came out, that's what they aimed to do with that. And, you know, it was cheesy, corny, and very much a TV movie. So, you know, a very expensive one, no doubt. But in this stage, we've got something that looks really like the game. And if anything, looks a little bit like the old cartoon series, which was always a lot of fun. So I've got a big, you know, a lot of interest in how that goes and just what that's going to be like for us, the cinema goer. So we've got all that on the way, folks. As far as Lethal, we have the following films for you over the next couple of weeks. We will have a China O'Brien special. I'm waiting for a better copy of the film to reach here at the Quinlan's Cantina because I really want to rejoice all of the great Cynthia Rothrock material when I can. We're going to be looking at, in the next week, Kickboxer, Super Mario Brothers, Starship Troopers, The Last Starfighter, The Shadow. We've already done Robot Jocks. We're also going to be looking at Streets of Fire. Yes, the Michael Paré rock and roll classic. This is something that a lot of people are interested in. Of course, that came hot on the heels, of course, of Eddie and the Cruisers. Two amazing bloody films, if you ask me. And this has got elements of the rock and roll in there with, of course, Willem Dafoe as the villain. You couldn't do better than that.
Hajime!
Yeah!
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
It's been a while since we've done a dojo segment, so get straight back into what I've been doing training-wise. Been doing a lot of close quarter, hand-to-hand sparring and stuff like that too. This is a lot of this is to break up
what would be basically a grappling sparring match, if you like, or a grappling match. You know, there's ways to break free and sort of at least break the clinch and give you a bit of space to land some strikes. You may not be getting out of grappling range, but that's basically what we're looking at. Everything from strikes from Kali and a lot of the different traps that they use, but also things like, of course, the new Casey fighting method that was used in the Mission Impossible films and, of course, Batman Begins and stuff like that. Valid stuff because, again, you're protecting your head in a lot of the styles this where, you know, you're getting attacked by maybe more than one person. So there's some valid lessons in how to use your body effectively and, of course, keep people at bay. So I've been practicing a lot of that in my own time, but also working very hard on getting my Goju-Ryu where it needs to be. And, of course, part of that is getting the katas down, getting everything down. And just it's repetition, folks. You know, like anything when it comes down to martial arts, it's all about getting out there and actually turning up to classes. And, you know, if I'm not working, I'm trying to do that. Or at least if I miss a class, I'm doing it at home. And really focusing on getting that form correct and getting the finish on each move as I can. Also, taking part in judging some of these and tournaments that have popped up as well and reffing. And great thing about that is you get to see what, you know, works for your students, what works for you, what works for others. And sometimes what doesn't work, you know, so you can go back to the drawing board on a lot of that sort of stuff. Again, great insight into how the body works and how, obviously, too, nerves can ruin a fight, you know. Again, it goes back to what Frank Herbert wrote in the Dune series where he was talking between the fight between Gurney Halleck and Paul Atreides, you know, and one of the things is, I'm not in the mood, Paul says. And Gurney says, mood's got nothing to do with it, boy. You know, it's all about, you know, you fight when the need arises, when it's necessary. There's no mood. Should be no emotion in combat. Should be just instinctive and reactive like that. And that is exactly what we are learning in this style.
All right, folks, so today we are definitely talking about one of my all-time favorite action films and definitely a funny film at that as well. It's dark comedy, it's got drama, it's got thriller, it's definitely a noir thriller. You know, there's that, even the overdub that is done, or the voiceover that is done, is clearly, you know, an ode back to those films of the 70s and, you know, even earlier. It stars Mel Gibson as Porter, a man who's basically a crook. Is a professional crook who's going out and does a heist. When he does that heist, he has his pal Val Resnick, played by Greg Henry, the always reliable, entertaining Greg Henry, come along and give us one of the most funny but powerful performances when it comes to an entertaining bad guy. Val attempts to kill Porter by using, of course, in this one, Porter's own wife, Lynn, played by Deborah Kara Unger, who's basically a drug addict, and buddies up with Val to split the money evenly so that they would get both parts of what would have been the heist money, which is $70,000. Of course, in this, Greg, playing Val Resnick, Val needs to get back with the syndicate, basically the mafia. And to do that, he needs to pay his debts of $130,000. To do that, he, of course, kills off Porter, takes the money. And, of course, doesn't do a good enough job because guess what? Porter survives. And that is, of course, the linchpin at the start of this story. It's very entertaining, very funny movie, folks. And Mel Gibson's really at the height in this one of his wisecracking, you know, rigs like persona. You know, it's definitely that sort of a feel to it. And definitely from the same company that gave you Lethal Weapon, folks. So let's have a look at it. We've got, starring alongside them, Mario Bello playing Rosie, who's a hooker who works for the syndicate, and she's living in the same buildings that they put those through to. We've got, as one of the many that gets taken down by Mel Gibson in this movie, Arthur Stegman, played by, of course, David Paymer, who you would have seen in 100 different things. He's always around, and again, quite a funny actor, got to say. Bill Duke, who's a fantastic director in his own right, and also, great actor going all the way back to, of course, Commando. And, of course, he was in, of course, Predator. You know, he played Mac in that. And it was a fantastic film. That's another one that we love here, folks, of course, is Predator. But Bill Duke in this, I guess, to play Detective Hicks, and it's a funny role, quite a funny one indeed. We've got as Carter, who's sort of the mid-level boss of the organization, played by William Devane, who was really good in Stargate, if I remember right. He's in a lot of different stuff. Oh, maybe even it was Space Cowboys they see him in. But reliable actor, always playing pretty much leaders or political figures, all that sort of stuff. John Glover from Smallville playing Phil, which is one of Devane, or in this case Carter's many stooges, and gets put upon by, of course, Mel Gibson. We have as Detective Leary, Jack Conley, and he's fantastic in this too. Again, playing quite a silly, you know, corrupt cop in this as well. We've got Lucy Liu playing Pearl, and she's great in this. She gets to beat the living daylights out of Greg Henry in many scenes, and it's quite good. In this, we also have a couple other bigger characters in this as well, which are always fantastic. Chris Christopherson being one of them. And here's what's interesting about that too, is that not only have we got him in this as an added benefit, we've also got some others as well. But what I love about it, it really works well to what we've got here. And folks, we're going to get right into it. So Brian Helgeland was the original director on this. We'll say he is the director. He directed all the footage, directed and obviously wrote the story. In what was a much darker film, I think, you know, less comic. There's definitely a lot more funny was put into the film since he was pulled off the movie. And, of course, the original writers are Donald E. Westlake, Brian Helgeland, and Terry Hayes. Like many films, you have a number of different writers on those projects, but in this one's no slouch. You know, they've done a fantastic job at a tight script that really delivered. I think what was the biggest issue on that original version was there's no clear villain at the end. You're getting this voice from a lady who's running the syndicate who basically will not give the money back to Porter. And so he starts killing off everybody in his way towards her until he gets his money. This has got a very, you know, big part of my, you know, I think my early 20s this was when it came out. This film was one which I think was the last experience my father had of going to the cinema with me before he passed in 2000. And he's always liked Mel Gibson's work, and he always really got a sense of, you know, this being a big part of, you know, the entertainment that he enjoyed, which was bang for buck action films, but also something with a bit of a sly, dry wit, which something is definitely part of what Mel Gibson's movies were at the time. You know, obviously he's already a competent and fantastic director with, of course, things like 4 years earlier with Braveheart and, of course, all the others that he'd done. But, you know, I think not enough was said about his acting ability, which was always very, very good. So that makes it even the more interesting as we get through this too. So we're going to go through a bit more of the cast in a sec, because there's some action film people that you know very well, folks. A lot of this you can find, of course, on imdb.com. Again, there's many different versions of this movie. So as I was saying, like the director's cut is quite a different one. And that was one that was basically extended edition, if you like. But definitely something that was, you know, part and parcel of where things were going. I think what I love about it is that everyone is in on the gag, if you like, to a certain extent. They know that Porter's Porter. You know, he's just going around what he's got to do. And, you know, you got Bronson, who turns out to be obviously the big part of this. And in the theatrical edition, it's Chris Christopherson, which is an added thing that was put in there. But originally, Bronson was a lady that we just don't know. We just know her voice. And then the film itself ends in a shootout near a train station. All right. So it's not exactly what you would class as, you know, the same look and feel. All right. And that's what I think makes it interesting too. Now, we've got a bunch of bad guys in this, which are just fantastic. And one of them just pops up straight away, you know, is one of the greatest stuntmen and fight choreographers of our time. And, of course, has been in some of those biggest movies out there. We're talking about, of course, Jeff Imada. Now, Jeff Imada is responsible for some of my favorite fight scenes put to film. He's an extremely well-versed martial artist. Alone, just that is one of the big parts. But he's been in so much since. You know, is in so many films. The Bourne films, Bourne Ultimatum, he was doing stunts in. They Live, Escape from LA. I do believe he was in Escape from New York as well. Furious 7 as well, he was in. There's just so much that he's done when it comes to, and a lot of the TV shows we grew up with, you know, he's worked on. Batman v Superman, Godzilla. I mean, just keeps going and going. And even he was the fire coordinator and on After Earth, the Will Smith and his son's film. Again, not that bad a film, folks. I actually quite like that film for what it is. So we've got all of that, you know, in a film like this. It's just fantastic. It really was, you know, let's get as many people as we can, you know, on this film. We've got Freddie Rodriguez plays the punk messenger in this that comes up to Lynn, obviously Porter's wife, tries to sell her drugs and, of course, gets the crap kicked out of him for information for Porter. So, again, some really, really amazing stuff here. But, of course, we've got, you know, that all together in what is a, I think, you know, a film which doesn't get enough credit for what it is. And, you know, as much as it's good to see the new version, if you like, in this, I think what's interesting is that whatever was done to the script and, of course, the extra scenes via, of course, you know, the work that was done by, you know, Mel, it works. And, again, it was his production company, Icon Productions, put this out. And I think that's what makes it, you know, all the more powerful to watch. You know, it really is amazing. And that's why it works so damn well. You know, there's a lot when it comes down to, you know, the people behind the camera and stuff like that too. But when you've got somebody like, you know, obviously, you know, Mel, who's done so many different films and obviously being a director now, was able to really push for that. And I think, you know, that's what makes it such good. It still gets 7 out of 10 on most of the different, obviously, reviews and stuff like that too. So it's a popular film, folks. Whatever Mel was doing was right. It's the right way to go about it. We'll look at some of the production in a sec, but I want to look quickly at some of the trivia. And here's what I really like is when they talk about some of the different parts, you know, and without a doubt, some of them being, you know, different countries they were put through too. For release in Australia, the US tagline was "Get ready to root for the bad guy." It was changed to "Get ready to cheer for the bad guy" because, as Mel Gibson pointed out, to root is to have sex. That's what we call it out here too. Jimmy Coburn found the prop cigars in the movie that he used, I was supposed to use, unfit for smoking, so he went into Mel Gibson's trailer. Gibson wasn't there and helped himself to a few of Gibson's own cigars. So, as again, you haven't heard in this that Jimmy Coburn's in this because it looks like it's been taken off IMDb's credit listing. I don't know why. I can't see it on here on the Australian edition. Prove me wrong, but it's not there. But yes, he plays alongside one of the others as one of the underlings to Bronson. Brian Helgeland was fired from the film 2 days after he'd won his Oscar for L.A. Confidential. Interesting. Helgeland was working on the script for this in with friend and mentor Richard Donner's office on the Warner Brothers lot while they were working on Conspiracy Theory. They're collaborating on that, and that's, I guess, how Mel got into being part of this too. Deborah Carranza broke two ribs in the scene where Mel Gibson beats her, which is now restored in the director's cut. She says she was having fun flying around getting slammed into things and did one too many takes of it. 30% of the film was reshot with Brian Helgeland was replaced as director. So obviously that's when Gibson came in. Helgeland was in post-production on his film night of the Academy Awards and had been nominated for his LA Confidential. The script, he really hoped he would name the winner. I knew that they were getting close to finally removing me off this movie, he said. He won. Sean Connery tousled his hair backstage while congratulating him. That was his Sunday night. And on Tuesday, I got fired. So much for the magic of Academy Awards, he says. Mario Bello was cast after an endless search led into a stack of videotape auditions for the defunct 1990s update of Superman. After offering the role to Bello, Bello turned it down, saying the role wasn't for her. Obviously, she came back after that too. Interesting. While the identity of the person assigned to direct the reshoots of the film following the departure was originally unknown, Mel Gibson revealed in a Hong Kong newspaper interview that the person was production designer John Meyer. Meanwhile, on his website, director Paul Abascal explained that he was the director hired for the reshoots. So, looks like Mel was in charge of putting that together, at least had some sway, being obviously one of the producers, but they got somebody to reshoot some of those scenes. One of the major additions to the movie after Helgeland left included Chris Christopherson's character as the main villain. The reshoots resulted in a delay of almost 1 year because Mel Gibson was committed to Lethal Weapon 4. The restoration of the director's cut took place in 05. Most of the original elements of the film were not preserved, so editor Kevin Stitt and Helgeland had to make do with what they had in an Avid system. Sally Kellerman is the original voice of Bronson in Brian Helgeland's director's cut, and he's never seen. For the theatrical cut, Bronson is played by Chris Christopherson. Almost all of the telephones in the movie are rotary, not touch tone. Interesting. Going old school. Remake of Point Blank, this film. Point Blank was in 1967 with Lee Marvin, based on the book The Hunter, one of Donald E. Westlake's Parker novels. The book was originally renamed Point Blank for some printings. John Borman, who had directed the original version of the novel Hunger, Point Blank, was asked to do a press conference what he thought of the remake. He told the reporters that he had not seen it yet, but he had read the script, and he said the script reminded him of one of Lee Marvin had thrown out his window in fury at his awfulness, and that a young Mel Gibson must have been passing by and picked it up. The only character out of the outfit to understand that Porter's cut is 70,000 is Carter's henchman, Phil. No, it's that too. So there's much more trivia there, folks, but of course this is a film that we want to get talking about the production of as well. And this is what I think is interesting, is that, you know, films that do have that sort of thing have multiple inputs, which I think is an interesting part of the heist itself too. The film was shot November 1997 in Chicago and Los Angeles, though neither city is actually referred to in the film. You could pretty much surmise that it's Chicago that they're trying to say in this. Obviously, Gibson, after the principal photographer, admitted that he was instrumental in having Helgeland removed as director before the film was released. Script rewrite happened by Terry Hayes, and of course, then production designer John Meyer directed, others have claimed that they wanted to change it too. Helgeland's version, straight up the director's cut, released on DVD Blu-ray in 07 and end on 06, run at the Austin Film Festival. The only thing, apart from the Sally Kellerman parts, is does not include the voiceover by Porter and several Bronson-related scenes during their scuffle, which is no longer in the theatrical version and was the main source of controversy. Porter earlier tells Lynn that his picture with Rosie was taken from there they met, thereby rendering her jealously unjustified. This version has an entirely different, ambiguous ending where Porter is seriously wounded. And this is the one at the train shooting, the train station, sorry. Mel Gibson stated in a short interview, it was released on DVD, that he basically wanted to make it like black and white. Now, this is interesting. It's a little bit like what Miller wanted with Mad Max, the Road Warrior, wanted to do it at black and white. You know, the people want a colour image, then the film actually has a bleach bypass on it too. Box office, this was well received at $21 million in its opening weekend and $161 million worldwide, which is pretty huge. Critical reception, it's looking at, of course, everything from, we won't mention the website because it's just rubbish. Rotten Tomatoes, you are rotten. We don't like you. But we'll say that it's getting everywhere from a B to an A on cinema score. And Roger Ebert, there's much cleverness and ingenuity in Payback, but Mel Gibson is the key. Movie wouldn't work without an actor who has a heavy on his feet who was too sincere about the material. So again, knowing that, you know, this can play as both an action comedy and vice versa. Some of my favourite scenes are just the ones where Porter's working his way into like the syndicate or whatever, and, you know, he surprises them that he doesn't want the $130,000, he wants his $70,000, which surprises them that, you know, he's not greedy. All that in this is just crazy. This film gets a 5 out of 5 on, of course, the Hallenbach scale.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.